Blog Talk Radio.
Poetry allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets, Blog Talk Radio, part of allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a part of Late Night Poets to participate, but it's more fun if you are. I do post the links in the chat so you can follow along, and you can participate by calling in or talking in the chat. So it looks like I have two callers, and I'm going to take a guess at who we have. I think one of them is Kel. Kel, are you here?
I am. Good job.
All right. My second guess is Pam. Pam Ray, are you with us?
Ding, 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 you are a winner.
Woo-hoo! I got two for two. Welcome, ladies.
Girls, good to be here.
Good to have you here. Even I'm having some technical difficulties, it would seem, is playing the song to a different show, and then I tried to switch it over to my show, and then it just decided not to play at all. So.
Well, the hopefully that's not... Weird out. I've had the first thing happen before, but yeah, I thought when all of a sudden your intro song went off that you had pulled me into the green room, because it was like all of a sudden there was just this silence.
No, well, it was strange because the whole sideboard lit up, like all the songs were going to play at once, and I tried to stop that, and I stopped everything, so I thought, well, you know, let's just go with it.
Well, there you go. It was obviously a sign that you were either meant to play every single After Midnight intro song at once or start the show, and I think just the show was the better call.
I think so. I must have a button that was locked or something. Just wanted to do all the things.
Right?
So tonight, our theme is Crossroads. And Crossroads is a song by Calvin Russell, who's one of my dad's favorite kind of folksy kind of singers. And the prompt one was, I'm standing at the crossroads. There are many roads to take, but I stand here so silently for fear of a mistake. One path leads to paradise. One path leads to pain. One path leads to freedom, but they all look the same. Prompt two is, I've traveled many roads, and not all of them were good. The foolish ones taught more to me than the wise ones ever could. And then prompt three is, if I don't change my direction soon, I might just get where I'm going to. It's a troublesome world, and the people in it are troubled with troubles most every minute. And that last prompt is actually from the song Too Old to Grow Up Now, which is actually quite a fun song. It's like, well, I'm too old to grow up now, so I'm just going to have fun. but there's always somewhat of a deeper message in his songs. So those were the prompts for tonight, and we got some great poems in response to that. I apologize for my voice. I've had a cold all week, so I'm a little bit raspy today. here we go. So why don't we start with Kel, who I have on here. Where it is, Hell in a Handbasket. Excellent title. All right, Kel.
Yeah, Hell in a Handbasket. It's been said many times that I need to change my ways to do things right. But really, it's too much trouble to stay within the boundaries of my own mind. Drama and trauma seem to follow me, no matter what I choose to do anyway. Can't get out of my own brain's place. I wake up in the morning instantly in trouble with something or other. It can be a pattern, not necessarily a good one, not always my problem. Either way, I'm probably going to hell in a handbasket, not through a bladed guillotine where my head landed, or even down a mine with dynamite with no golden nuggets located. That's provided my head isn't blown away. Perhaps I'll ride the bus back from hell with my uncle delivering ice water. Either way, life's too much fun to watch my path to hell go any other way. On the other hand, I think sometimes I deserve a medal for being good, or even better yet, a chest to pin it on. End poem.
That was excellent, Kel. Thank you for that read. And it's such a great piece because, you know, it says something that is serious, but at the same time you use such humor in it. I really liked that last line, a chest to pin it on. The riding the bus back from hell with my uncle delivering ice water. It's classic. That's awesome. I really liked Oh, yeah. I love that. I really liked the idea of it's too much trouble to stay within the boundaries of my own mind. Like, it's one thing, it's unbelievable that people expect you to follow their paths when you can barely keep track of, like, what your own head is trying to do. So there's that overwhelming feeling of, like, I'm just trying to stick to my own thing and stay on the road, never mind follow the directions of others who might not understand my path. I thought that you did this so nicely. It had like an intelligence to it, but such humor that even though we're talking about everything going to hell, it's still like a pleasant journey. So I thought this was very nicely done. Pam, would you like to comment? You're welcome, Cal. What do you think, Pam?
Absolutely. Oh, I really enjoyed this, and I have to agree, it had a really great message about, you know, following your own path, and you know how oftentimes people just think that every decision, every choice, every rule applies to every person's life, and that like people are cookie cutters, cookies cut out cookies. That's what I meant to say. And I really like it can be a pattern, not necessarily a good one, not always my problem. Either way, I'm probably going to hell in a handbasket. Now that line there makes me want to find out where exactly the phrase hell in a handbasket came from. Wonderful, clever humor within this all the way through. And I also really liked that ending. I deserve a medal for being good, or even better yet, a chest to pin it on. You know, I have to say, I have a chest to pin it on. I just need the medal for waking up and not snapping anybody's neck.
Who's that?
And great right there, Kel. Very well done.
I looked up that phrase, hell in a handbasket, to see where it came from. And it came from originally from France, when they used the guillotine and the head landed in a basket.
Oh, my goodness.
When the miners, during the gold rush, when they would go down the mine with dynamite in a basket. Is taken from either one of them.
Oh, wow. That is really cool.
Yeah. I was going to put that in my Anne, and I forgot. Oh, well.
Yeah, it seems like it's been used a lot, too. I tried looking it up at the same time, and it's like there's a song called Hell in a Handbasket by Voltaire. There's a character on the show Friends called Helena Handbasket. I'm pretty sure it was one of Phoebe's alter egos. Helena Handbasket. This is fun.
Okay.
So why don't we do, not the same one again, if I could copy a link. All right, here we go. This is one by Neutron Bomb. And here we go. Fossilized by Neutron Bomb. A pierced lip is worth 1,000 inked words. Calligraphy stains my rib cage out of the ashes, imprinted with 9 needles etching at the skin. Tangerine wings of a phoenix rising, flexing with tail of fire. But I'm stuck in the ash and tar. The road forward is burnished in bitumen, a petrified mosquito. Caught in stasis, flailing, then fossilized. The path ends here, if I let it. End poem. Ooh, I like that, if I let it, at the end there. She has such beautiful, dark imagery. Calligraphy stains my rib cage. That just feels like so strong. It's like etched within her bones. And that lip being pierced, rather than writing the words or saying the words, having it like physically there. And the idea of like the bug fossilized, so you're stuck there in that path, except she challenges that at the end. The path ends here if I let it. I really like that ending. Kel, what did you think?
I totally agree with you. I thought it was beautiful. I saw the calligraphy as a tattoo. It is imprinted with 9 needles etching at the skin, tangerine wings of a phoenix rising. That's a beautiful image. Oh, my God, that's beautiful. Flexing with tail of fire, but I'm stuck in the ash and tar. The road forward is burnished. And then, you know, caught in stasis, flailing and fossilized. Path ends here. If I let it. That is a very, very powerful little phrase. If I let it. That's amazing. Really well done, Neutron.
Agreed. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like this. You know, Neutron has such a unique way with her metaphors and imagery. I like how this can be read as a phoenix rising out of the ashes, but she does it in such a clever way. It becomes stronger because of the fact that it's not so much, like you often feel like the phoenix really has no choice, but here the phoenix herself has a choice, because as you mentioned, that ending line, that's just powerful. The path ends here if I let it. Meaning, you know, I feel like this is a write about personal growth, personal expression, and the opportunity to move forward. And I really like imprinted with nine needles etching at the skin, tangerine wings of phoenix rising, flexing with tail fire, but I'm stuck in the ash and tar. The road forward is burnished in bitumen, a petrified mosquito. It kind of gives that sense. The petrified mosquito just really makes me think of the kind of imagery where all time is standing still. And it's just really just an intriguing and powerful brevity and very well done.
It really is. Well said, Pam. Pam, would you please read the poem by Stephen T. Wellman?
I would be happy to. All right. This is Cluttered Crossroads by Stephen T. Wellman, and it goes like this. I stood like a block of wood, like a tempered tree lost, green with envy, choices made, come with a high cost, a misfit mannequin, a processed piece of sawdust, yet one does what they must to survive melancholy madness. Crossroads create pain and disdain, a prodigal reluctantly returning home, embellishing stories about dragons slain, castle walls charged and crumbled, only to find we become blind when we can't see past our own misery. The wall was a curtain covering everything within. I was the castle protecting my kingdom. I had no purpose, yet the truth is these roads I take did a fool make. I learned that the forbidden can never be kept hidden. It is the true measure. It is the unknown treasure we soulfully seek to find, walking cluttered crossroads in the deep, dark canyons created in my mind. Learning to let go, the tree does grow. My colored pages fall, hearing the call to mend and bend with winter wind and poem.
Beautiful read. Kel, will you start the comments for us?
Oh, this is amazing. I love the metaphors of misfit mannequin. Wow, that's amazing. Processed piece of sawdust. And then the embellishing stories about dragons slain, castle walls. And it's just really an awesome poem, imagery. And I learned the forbidden can never be kept hidden. It is a true measure to the unknown treasure. It's got beautiful, excellent rhythm and rhyme, and the flow is just really terrific. And it's a really a wonderful piece of self-enlightenment, you know, learning to let go. The tree does grow. My colored pages fall, hearing the call to mend and bend. That's just, it's a very amazing poem. I loved it.
It really is. I liked that he talked about being a processed piece of sawdust. that being that block of wood. So, you know, it's not feeling like the tree that is full of promise and life and is still rooted. He feels like he's been worn down, and he's this processed piece that somehow you still have to, you know, serve your purpose when you've been processed in that way. I thought that was such a powerful metaphor that I wish I had more time to contemplate on before commenting. I really like the embellishing of stories that he talks about there, because sometimes that is how we survive, with those fun embellishments of stories, much like on the show last night with Double Helix that I was doing with Dexter and Pam was there, that we talked about stories that are exaggerated and the power of those stories and how much fun you can have and how they create that sense of like family and tradition, and here we are embellishing stories again here. It feels like it's all connected. I really liked that he talks about it being a cluttered crossroads. Sometimes there's so much in your path that it gets overwhelming knowing which path to take, because it's not even just a clear road on either option. It's too cluttered to see what you're getting into. I thought that was a nice detail there. And also has good alliteration, cluttered crossroads. Pam, what did you think about the poem?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is beautiful. It's powerful. I really liked the imagery of a high, choices made come with a high cost, a misfit mannequin, a processed piece of sawdust, and then castle walls charge and crumble and finally become blind when we can't see past our own misery. What I like about this is the message of how we move forward in our journey of life past everything and everyone that's hurt us, but that idea that we remain blind unless we start looking at other people and, you know, being concerned with their happiness and their joy and our own happiness and joy, rather than constantly being focused on misery. I also really liked we soulfully seek to find walking cluttered crossroads, because I like that he put the word cluttered before crossroads, because the crossroads represents the idea of having to come to a standstill and make a life-altering choice. And oftentimes when we're making choices, our minds can easily become cluttered with all the what-ifs. So I think that was a great choice in phrasing and excellent right all the way through and very well done.
I think you're absolutely right, Pam. All of those what-ifs really do clutter our and obscure our choices. So I think that was a great comment for that part of the poem. Now I'm going to get, I'm trying to skip the ones that we were supposed to have audios for because we're having some technical difficulties that maybe we'll get past. So here we go. Why don't I get Kel to read us the one by Daniel Deschino?
All right. Crossroads Part 3. By Daniel Deschino. Time paints over mortality with the artful strokes of hope, and with each brushstroke does the portrait of our ego build layer after layer of colored emotions and textured experiences till there is just no more room on the canvas and we are done. Masterpiece is finished. The one thing about art we always forget is there's always another empty canvas. There are plenty of songs never written and a myriad of word combinations never discovered. We are all scared of mortality because in our hearts no one really knows what it is. When it is finally seconds away, we all think we're right because we would never want to admit the alternative. And we think of our portraits as done,
because eventually we run out of paint. But as humans on these accounts, we do all have one thing in common. We are all terribly and tragically wrong. So far from the forest in our minds, a baby bird recently pushed from its nest, in reality forced to get up and fly on the airstreams or die on the ground. Unfortunately, we can't fly, so the ground it is. And humanity walks on a lonely, unexplored road with a path left behind, unseen through the shadows of ignorance, and a path ahead, unseeable by the blinding rays of time. Here we stand, at the crossroads of evolutionary imperfection, 1 billion directions to go, 1 trillion directions off of each of those, and quadrillions more after. And here we are, guided by emotions we do not understand and cannot control, hoping for logic we cannot understand and cannot control, searching for a reason we cannot understand and cannot control. Roll the bones and let the shaman point the way. End poem.
Thank you for that great read, Cal. And thank you so much, Daniel. So this is part three, because actually he had written for the contest, and I read his poem last week because we had extra time at the end of last week's contest, and then he wrote another one, and this ends up being, I think, his third, based on the topic, which is really awesome that we got more poems out of him for this contest. So thank you so much, Daniel, for continuing to write. And I always appreciate seeing your poems in the contest, and then also the extra ones like this. I loved the concept of the painting being our life, and those artful strokes of hope, but it fills up, and layer after layer of all of those emotions builds our painting. It's our experiences add texture to things. He says that so well. And then the idea of running out of room on the canvas. You know, sometimes the portrait is done. This is, your life is that masterpiece. And there's not much else to add to it. And that just seems like such an amazing metaphor. That first stanza alone is incredible. And then we get into, you know, that fear of the unknown, of what happens after. And that the baby bird, I can just picture, I've seen it on nature shows where the mom pushes the baby out of the nest and it's falling, and then maybe it will fly, and hopefully it will fly, but not all of them do. And then he really hits us with, we can't fly, so the ground it is. And then there's that hit of humanity not soaring in that way, not just as a person, but like as a whole of the species. And it's such a big, like, looking at the big picture of things, it goes from one person making a decision to the crossroads of evolution with a billion directions to go and a trillion directions off of those. He really, like, escalates things. And then the ending, roll the bones and let the shaman point the way. I really like that, that kind of throwback to I'm going to say pagan in general, because there's different cultures who did it, or some still do, where predicting things with the roll of those bones and the runes, and just finding your direction through maybe spirituality, maybe superstition, going for guidance in some way. People have always tried to find ways to know what to do. I mean, in a less serious way, think of like the popularity of Magic 8-Balls decades ago, where, you know, I don't think very many people would have actually made their life choices based on it, but I do remember as a child trying to get it to tell me things, and then I would always get the, like, try again later, be so angry, because, you know, you want direction, you want to feel like you're following something that is confirming your gut feeling. So I appreciated that. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, I think if he already has three parts written, and I'm sure he could easily come up with more, and this is just really intriguing, and I'd really like to read the first two. I think he should create a list and put them on a list so they can be found all in one piece. Part. I do like how he stretches out beyond the individual and rather takes a whole look at humanity, and not just humanity in one moment, but stretched throughout history. The one thing about art we always get is there's always another empty canvas. There are plenty of songs never written and a myriad of word combinations never discovered. Now, I really like that he reminds us of that there's a myriad of word combinations never discovered, because sometimes we feel like as poets and artists there's nothing new out there, and maybe not 100% new, but we definitely can twist things to make it fresh. And I really like, so far from the forest in our minds, a baby bird recently pushed from its nest in reality, unfortunately can't fly to the ground it is. You know, too often that testing of flight just, you know, it doesn't work out. And I, too, enjoyed, I liked his, how he writes, here we stand at a crossroads of evolutionary imperfection. Almost as if the evolutionary imperfection is going to be what becomes the catalyst for major change within the humanity and the universe. So just a really wonderful, thought-provoking write, and very well done.
I agree. And I really like your thought on having a list. Because I think that he has enough poems now that are kind of connected in that way. Even though they each stand alone, it would be cool to have a list where you can find them all. And they do take the prompts in different directions, but I really enjoyed all of his versions of things. Kel, would you like to comment?
I don't know what more I can say. I love all the possibilities for art and writing and music and everything that you put into this. It's just a very eloquent writing, and it's just absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's just so full of hope and positivity and choices. It's amazing. I loved it.
Me too. And Mindy and Phil have come to the rescue, so we now have an audio for Mamya's piece. If the studio likes me better now, let us see. Oh, actually, before I do that, it looks like we have another caller.
Oh.
Welcome to the show. May I ask
you? Thank
you.
How are you, Faith?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. This is Victoria.
I thought so.
Oh. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Great to have you here. Were you able to
Thank
hear the poem by Daniel?
I didn't. I was just able to run upstairs and nestle into my office and was just hearing that we got Mamya downloaded. So unfortunately I didn't, but I will definitely check it out and leave a comment.
Cool. Thank you. So you're just in time for Mamya. I'm going to play her audio. Where am I? No. Sorry. Looks like
no,
I'm still having trouble.
Some blog talk issues.
It must be.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're just going to have to read Mamia. So, Victoria, would you do the read for that one?
Absolutely. So, this is Chasing What If by Mamia. Playing safe in life. To keep away from foolish mistakes, making secure decisions to keep the boat from rocking. But blood poured from self-inflicted wounds and the mind played with alternative realities. With choice made, I walked away barefoot. The smooth pavement was kind on my soles, but soon friction had me blistering. My bloody footprints witnessed my perseverance. Chasing what if, I dragged myself on, dehydrated into the monsoon rain, finding shelter among familiar strangers. Soon, I'm immersed in debauchery I did not choose, a willing accomplice for so I thought, just an unwitting victim under a galvanized roof. Still, I kept on walking, defiant in the face of fate. I will find the end of the what if, even if it leads to certain heartbreak. Down the rabbit hole all the way I go, till I come out the other end. No worse for wear, back to where I started this time. I chose it. End poem.
Great read. Thank you, Victoria. And Mamia, I'm sorry we couldn't make it work in your own voice, but I think that this is a beautiful poem. It speaks so strongly about, you know, inner conflict. I know that you've written before about self-harm and that painful experience in other poems. And so to have this here, blood poured from self-inflicted wounds and the mind played with alternative realities, that's so hard to talk about that struggle, both mental and physical, that comes there. But you do it in such a graceful way. And then to wonder about these alternate realities where what if that happened? What if that happened? And choice made, walked away barefoot. And there's something really powerful about it being barefoot. Choosing to go, not armored up and protected, but vulnerable and exposed and experiencing. I think that barefoot is a really important part there. And the smooth pavement, described as kind on my soles, but even when things seem like they're going smoothly, there's always some friction there. And soon there are those bloody footprints. And I think it's true in life. Even when people think you have, like, smooth sailing, there's friction that's slowly wearing away at you. And it takes perseverance to get through. I think that you used the metaphors here so wonderfully. Interesting to say, debauchery, I did not choose. Sometimes you're put in situations where it's just how things are. But then I love the ending where you go down the rabbit hole and you're back to where you started, but this time chose it. I'm really, like, all the poems so far, I'm loving the endings. There is such strength of will that is exposed at the end of this poem, at the end of many of the poems that we've been reading. And I love to hear that from our poets. So, Mamia, thank you so much for sharing this. It's beautifully written. Victoria, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. This poem spoke to me on several levels. I grew up in a relatively protected household, and because of how my parents parented, there really wasn't the opportunity to make those less than secure decisions. We be it both religion and science, it was abstinence till marriage. Neither me nor any of my siblings did drugs or alcohol or any of that stuff. We were in the, all of my siblings and I graduated in the International Baccalaureate program in high school. So we were the goody two-shoe kids, at least we were supposed to. And even though I was gothic as my rebellious streak, it was still relatively safe. You know, I didn't have an interest in those kinds of things. But even in all that safety, there was a hollowness. And so I appreciated that second stanza, because when you think of someone whose life is relatively cushy, relatively secure, they kind of have their path determined for them. You don't think that they should have a reason to hurt. And yet that second stanza reminds me of my high school years and the late nights in which I would take a blade to myself. I have enough scars on my ankles because people don't look at your ankles, that when the light catches them just right, you can see literally hundreds of little tiny cuts in them. And I feel that hollowness between the first and the second stanza. And I remember when I divorced my ex-husband after his fourth affair, my mother was more concerned about the image I was providing as a testament of her failure than the fact that to return to that man meant neglect, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, and continued affairs that I would have to live through. And so in that moment, like Nanya says in that second verse, I walked away barefoot. I walked away from a safety net. I walked away from possibly having a relationship with my mother because she wasn't safe and she was fighting with essentially my abuser. And I walked. And I like how she said, like you said, she mentioned the smooth pavement was kind on my soles, but soon friction had me blistering. My bloody footprints witnessed my perseverance. And I love that she used that, because I remember, even as an adult, but as a child, I would walk down the street, especially on a warm spring day, and the heat of the pavement always felt nice. But after so long, probably 5 minutes best, your feet start to ache. And that's such a poignant image. First, that comfort, that freedom, thinking that it'll be fine, but soon your feet start to hurt. And they start to ache, and eventually they blister, which will lead to bleeding as the skin is torn and the flesh exposed. And so she persevered, and even though she was alone in pain, obviously not having the nourishment that she needed, which just, I think, speaks to the abandonment of the soul, the loneliness, she still found refreshment in those monsoon rains. And I think of those ones that you find and you're immediately drenched. They don't really state the dehydration, but it still soothes you, if only for a minute. And I love, too, how she mentioned that in all of this, in this trial, she was led to this possibly a hut, so to speak, where she was able to find people who were similar to her. And to me, that really reminds me of actually finding late night poets. I found late night poets at a very isolating moment in my life. And I would say I found some of the most beautiful people from it. I mean, you, Faye, Pam, Phil, there's just some real beautifulness that can come from it. Of course, you can also find those people who are going to lead you astray. They're going to lead you down a path that you didn't really want to go to. And again, I think of my teenage years, of the companionship that I sought fresh in the world as I departed from family values that had been ingrained into me as the only way. And there's stuff that I did that I do regret. But eventually I crawled out of that rabbit hole. What I like about this, though, is that though she's fallen into Wonderland, she's now here because she chooses to be. She's in the place, whether it's the same place where she began or a completely different place that she never thought that she would be, she's there because she chose to be there. And that's such a powerful statement, because that first stanza speaks to that comfortable little home that you're brought up in, you're born into, and you don't get the opportunity to break away from. But finally, she's found a place that she chose. Maybe it's different than what her family thought. Maybe it's exactly where she began. But now she chose it, and she appreciates it, and she wants to be there. And I think that speaks to the journey that she went on to find it, be it Wonderland or be it back in a cushy home or wherever. She chose it. And sometimes we don't appreciate what we have until we've gone the hard trials. And sometimes we appreciate leaving that place even more after we've experienced the world. And I think that's what's so powerful about this poem, is that it doesn't matter ultimately where she ended up. The reader gets to apply it to our own stories, because we're all on this path. We're all at some point in this journey. We just haven't always realized it yet. So absolutely stunning piece, but Nanya always does.
That was such a beautiful and vulnerable and strong comment. So thank you, Victoria. Kel, would you like to comment?
Yes. I like this. Still, I kept on walking, defiant in the face of fate. I will find the end of the what ifs, even if it leads to certain heartbreak. You know, and even though she goes down a rabbit hole, no worse for wear, back to where I started, this time I chose it. You know, it's that choice that can help us keep going. You know, we might keep going kicking and screaming, but we keep going, and that's what matters. And I really appreciate this write. It's beautiful, it's empowering, and it speaks so much of Mamya. It's beautiful.
It was. Thank you, Kel. And Pam, sorry, excuse me. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, I really like that she took a darker approach with the prompt. You know, and that I all the way through, there's so many just really powerful and amazing lines, making secure decisions to keep the boat from rocking. Oftentimes when we do make decisions, it is difficult to know that, you know, we could easily be rocking boats, you know, walking away from comfort of the familiar, even if the familiar is what's hurting us. Chasing what ifs, I dragged myself on dehydrated in the monsoon rain, finding shelter among familiar strangers. I like that she put dehydrated in the monsoon rain, because of the fact that you think about there's all this water around, and it kind of makes me think of a metaphor for people offering up, you know, friendship or any other advice that does no good, and it's such as like when a monsoon rain, you got a lot of water around, but you can't drink it. I also like the mention of the rabbit hole and coming out the other side, and this time, you know, getting back to where I started, this time I chose it. You know, there's just a kind of certain sense of a very dark and personal journey. That's extremely difficult, and it's just excellent all the way through it. I really like the affirmative, still I kept on walking, defiant in the face of fate. the person who's willing to go through all those hard times to get past, I like the mention of the face of fate, because it just makes me think of how, like, when you come from a certain family or, you know, a certain, you know, like you were raised a certain way, you know, people have either expectations that you'll be a good person or a not a good person. You know, if you come from a family that deals with addiction, you know, they might see you as someone who is going to grow up to be an addict. And I feel like it's kind of like walking away from what people expect of you. And it's just strong right all the way through and very well done.
I agree. And that walking away from what is expected of you, whether good or bad, and finding your own path, is something that I think this prompt has brought out in many people. And I think Mamya did a great job of making this her own. And I love that when poets can take a prompt and add their personal flair and dig deep within themselves rather than just take it as a literal thing. I thought this was an excellent response. I'm going to do mine just because it's my turn to read as we take turns reading, and I might as well do my own. Navigating by Aphasiana. If you were to read the fortune on my palm, the lifeline would confuse a cartographer. There was no choice of paved or gravel. I don't recall a sign labeling the highway. Sometimes an open field with no sense of direction. Seeking a professional purpose, I'd stumble on affection. Turning towards that love, I'd fall in a festival trench. Chasing the party, I'd crash into responsibility. Chained to the iceberg of my desk, family drifted further. Life is not a path of either or. Each decision grows a branch. From my frail trunk, many branches have grown, each of them branching off again, until you need to zoom out to find the roots. Now I vaguely recall a bliss that I'd like to revisit, but this maze of branches has thorns and dangerous cracks. I want to step back, but can't be sure of the path. Trace the lines upon my hand, find which way rings true. I peer into overgrown forest, knowing now it's even less clear. Growing up didn't bring answers near. End poem. Kel, would you like to comment?
Certainly. Excuse me. I like this. Life is not a path of either or. Each decision grows a branch. From my frail trunk, many branches have grown, each of them branching off again until you need to zoom out to find the roots. This is a very eloquent piece, Faze. You know, finding your own path and, you know, more often than not, it is overgrown and hidden, and it's hard to find. And this is like, let's see, where was that? Okay, I vaguely recall a bliss that I'd like to revisit. That's looking back into the past. And sometimes looking back isn't always the right choice. You know, looking forward is a better option more often than not than trying to look back and then getting lost in what you're looking for or where you're going. So very well done.
Thank you. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. You know I would. I really like that you went with the kind of like an extended metaphor of palm reading, and the idea of, you know, that I really like I don't recall a sign labeling the highway. Sometimes in open field with no sense of direction, seeking a professional purpose, I'd stumble on affection, turning towards that love, I'd fall in a festival trench. You know, life isn't just like that straight walk. It really is tripping over the trenches, you know, so much that we end up getting chained to. Life is not a path of either or. Each decision grows a branch from my frail trunk. I thought that was just wonderful imagery right there. And the whole idea that when we look back and look at our life, we're not going to see a tree that's with, like we're not going to see a tree without branches. There's going to be branches and roots. Trace, and I like that you wrap it up again with the mention of the lines. Trace the lines upon my hand, five ways which rings true. I peer into overgrown forest, knowing now it's even less clear. You know, and it's, you know, the answers just don't always come right away, or they don't come clearly. And the thing is, they have to be our own answers. And I felt like that's part of what was in this poem was the idea that you're seeking or were seeking your own answers to your own, like the questions, like the meaning of life and, you know, the purpose for your life. And, you know, it just had that kind of sense of just really seeking and wanting it to be something of your own. And so just a powerful write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Victoria, would you like to comment?
Absolutely. So like Pam, I love the extended metaphor of palmistry or palm reading. I've actually never understood it. Again, the family I grew up in, that stuff was shunned, whether it was real or not. It was either a scam or a gateway for the devil. And so it was something to be feared and marveled at. And so I'll admit it's still fascinating to me though, and I can't help but think of those first lines in your first stanza. If you were to read the fortune on my palm, the lifeline would confuse the cartographer, because I can't help in that moment to look at my own hands and look at all the lines that are upon them and the ones that I remember seeing as a child. And yet all the extra ones that seem to be flooding in, those little micro lines that show the years, even on my hands. And I remember that as a child, we always would get the unsatisfactory answer of our parents saying, well, one day you'll understand, one day, you know, when you're older. And it's as if we have this ingrained in us that with age comes wisdom. And I'd say with age comes knowledge, but it's not always the kind of knowledge that helps us, especially when it comes to that deep-seated need to understand the whys of the world, to understand why things happen the way they do, why the universe works the way it is. You know, even the idea that we can change it, that we can be whatever we want to be, we soon learn that sometimes there are glass roofs and there are barriers of entry, and that much of what we were told, much of the hope we were given when we were younger, often doesn't exist. And it's a hard thing to kind of reconcile with. And so that's when we kind of look back into ourselves and say, well, if the answer is not something that we're going to learn as we get older, maybe it's something that will just make more sense now that we're older, looking back at the past. But what we ultimately end up realizing is that with age, it doesn't become any clearer. We might understand maybe one answer, but it branches into so many more. And so it now is a forest. Before we were looking at twigs, and now we finally see the trees. And it's a humbling thing. It's a beautiful thing, and it's a humbling thing to understand just how minute we are, how immaterial sometimes we are, how small. But at the same time, it can be terrifying because we're no longer distracted by the small things. Now we understand the immensity of the situation that we're in and the dangers that come with it. And I think that's what I like about this. When you go to a fortune teller, often it's to get answers to questions. It's to get some sort of knowledge that we can't quite grasp. And sometimes it's terrifying because we're afraid of what we could learn. And I think that worked really, really well with the metaphor, poem, a realization that knowledge comes, but it's not wisdom, and it's not always what we want to hear. I think this is actually quite a deep poem and just marvelously penned. Thank you for sharing this, Faith.
Thank you for such a lovely comment. And you at one point said something that made me think about how the more you know, the more you realize that you don't know. That idea of like you're going to know things when you're grown up, and all I know is that there's a lot of things out there that I don't know.
You know, quickly, they say that knowledge is knowing things and wisdom is knowing how much you don't know. So, sorry, you continue.
No, that's all right. In library school, they were like, a librarian doesn't have to know everything. They have to know that things are out there, and you have to know that that it's possible to find things and the idea of how to find things, but you can't be expected to know all things. And people just come up to the desk and they like ask you like the craziest things, and it's like, I don't know, but we'll find out. But I'm more and more aware all the time of how much I don't know.
That's amazing. I do have to say, as an accountant, especially with the vastness of tax law, a lot of times they, or at least early in your career, they teach you that you never give an immediate answer. You just say, it depends. Let's talk about it after a little bit. Or, you know, I don't quite know the answer yet, but let's get a little bit more information. It's always about that delaying.
Yes, you really have to. I've actually sort of loved working from home the last couple of years because I have time to answer things. Like, cause, you know, I get emails instead of someone, like, standing in front of me, and I can look into things and give them, like, a better answer, I find, than if people are in a rush. Kids are actually pretty good about, like, you having to be like, hey, let's find out. Adults want you to just know.
Like, yes.
Pam, I know it says there's an audio, but there's not really. Can you please read the one by Gerald E. Green?
I would be happy to. This is Choices by Gerald E. Green. And it goes like this. The roads I take are never good. They're full of mud or all uphill, and never take me where they should, but force me on against my will. They all look wide from far away, with double lanes and smooth as glass, inviting on a sunny day with downhill slopes to save on gas. But soon I find I've been misled. Those roads are not as advertised, but full of failure, death, and dread, another danger well disguised. So here I sit, I'm stuck in mud, up to my axles in distress. The water's rising to a flood. I'm in another self-made mess. I need directions, bigger maps, to find a better way to go, avoiding all those tricky traps of potholes, washouts, rain, and snow. End poem.
Thank you, Pam. Great read and wonderful poem, Gerald. I like that there's that sense of, you know, never feeling like you picked the right one, full of mud or all uphill, never take the one that you should. I always feel like that if I'm, like, waiting in lineup at a checkout thing. It's like the one that I pick will be the one that doesn't move, and everything else will go faster. And if I change, it will change too. I always pick the wrong one. And I'm feeling this on a much bigger, grander, more eloquent level in this poem where, you know, you pick the challenging path. They all look wide from far away with double lanes and smooth as glass. That's such a nice description of, like, how it seems like it's going to be so smooth and awesome. But then it's never as smooth as it seems. I mean, this is quite dark, actually, with death and dread. And, oh, he's such good alliteration all the time. Like, look at all the D words, death, dread, danger, disguised, distress. Being stuck in the mud is a feeling that I think applies to so many different things. Feeling stuck in your situation, stuck in terms of, like, not growing to the talent or the promotion or whatever it is that you think that you should be, stuck in a social rut, stuck in your own kind of thought circles. So many different ways to be stuck. And so to be stuck in the mud when you're trying to make a decision, trying to pick a path, and maybe your path doesn't go anywhere, I think that's a really good way of taking this metaphor. And the idea of needing directions, needing bigger maps, needing to have some guidance maybe on how to navigate things. I think that this is a very well-done piece for this contest. Kel, what were your thoughts?
Well, it kind of reminds me of my wedding day. To be perfectly honest, I was late. My flight was supposed to leave like the day before. And we'd had a lot of snowfall because it was like late December. And my flight ended up being canceled. And then the next day, I was able to catch the flight, but it got delayed in Chicago because of the weather. So I finally got to Sydney and got through customs and all the other bull crap, and I got my luggage and was trying to get out of the baggage area, and there was lines everywhere, you know, for people trying to get out, and I kept switching and switching and switching and switching and switching, trying to find one to get out because I was already late, and that's all I could think about. I'm late to my own wedding. This is awful, you know, and finally, an attendant must have noticed that I was getting really distressed. And she came up and she helped guide me out. And I went on and, you know, the marriage and everything went well. It was a beautiful wedding. But, you know, just kind of reminded me of that experience of just being so mired down in difficulties. You know, just trying to get there. Just trying to get there. I'm late. And all the little pitfalls and stuff that's, you know, get in our path and get in our way, even though we think it's going to be a smooth sail, it turns out to be a lot of hogwash. This is really well done. I liked it.
That sounds like such a stressful start to your wedding day. Oh, my gosh. It makes me so happy that, like, I decided to stay at my venue the night before. I was on this, like, kind of, like, farm thing, so I just stayed there because I was worried about having to get there. But that just sounds like such a nervous thing that would make me frazzled for the rest of the day. And
the thing is,
but like you said, you're so like muddled up once you get started and it's going badly that you just kind of like you know, you make it worse and worse. You know, when you're having a bad day and you crash into everything and you I don't know, I get very clumsy when I'm flustered. So it's like once you get yourself flustered, then it all just escalates. So sometimes if you start down a path and you fall down, it makes the path seem a little treacherous. But once you get yourself up, it's not so bad.
It was something. It's a three flights all together from Ohio to Chicago, and then L.A., and then on to Sydney. So it's just, and I tried to be there on time. You made it to myself, so what the hell? I'm never going to get there. it was
lying
an interesting experience. I was late for my wedding, you know?
It adds flavor to it, you know? I like that. You know, it hailed at my outdoor wedding, and it was still, you know, it made it interesting.
You just never
sometimes
know what's going to happen.
Right? The things that go wrong make it have even more personality.
Yep. Right. My brains did. All 11 of them.
Yes, and congratulations on your new ones. That's so exciting.
Yeah, thank you.
Pam, what did you think of the poem?
Oh, I really enjoy this. It has wonderful rhyme and flow. I really like how he talks about how the perception is different when you're far away, and it looks like the journey will be easy, the double lane, smooth as glass, inviting on the same day with downhill slopes to save on gas. One of the areas I grew up in for when I was younger was had a lot of hills. And so, you know, you would bicycle, you'd like, if you were at the top of a hill and you went down, it was all just, you know, easy coasting. But then when trying to get your bike up a hill of the same length, you know, you just, it was such a struggle. And it reminds me of that kind of struggle. And by the way, I loved your story, Kel. That was just funny. And, you know, I like how he mentions, so here I sit, I'm stuck in mud. And I think it's so true that oftentimes because we make a choice based on what we see from far away rather than giving it a closer inspection, you know, it's like we don't take time to really look at the little details of the picture. And so then we end up getting ourselves stuck. So I really like the approach that he took with the prompt, and that's just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Victoria, what did you think?
Well, I first have to comment on Kel's and you even talking about your guys' wedding, because I learned my lesson after my first marriage, and I eloped on my second one. So... but I think this is such a stunning poem, and it actually reminds me of I don't even know what to call it. It's a real, I guess it, I would say it's a real life horror story. But legitimately, there was a family that was traveling. It was a husband, a wife, and two small children. I think that their eldest was a toddler, and their baby was a baby, like 6 months old baby. And this poem reminded me of it because they were traveling. They were on a long road trip back in the 90s, so there weren't really cell phones widely available, early 90s. And they were on this road trip around Thanksgiving, and they were supposed to go to this hotel that they had called ahead of time to make plans for. And it was getting late. They decided to take a shortcut. And this was an area that's not really safe during the summer, and during the fall, winter, it's even more so unsafe, to the extent that part of their navigating away from it, they had to just drive the car backwards because it was just a rock cliff and a rock wall and a drop that would have killed the family. And so the wife ended up opening her door and looking out of the door while the husband slowly backed the car away in snowfall that didn't let them see maybe 5 feet, which is terrifying. And as they were doing that, instead of continuing all the way back down the road, they saw another road that went, that sloped down, and they thought that it would be safe, and so they took it. And because of happenstance, a series of unfortunate events, call it what you will, there was actually supposed to be a gate because they took a logging road that didn't go anywhere. And by the time that they reached the bottom of the hill and things had started raining, they ended up actually in an area that no one was going to visit until the spring. And their car was almost out of gas. So they actually spent almost 5 days in the car attempting to figure out what to do, sure that someone was going to find them, eating what small car snacks they had, rationing them as they could. And it's a fairly unfortunate story. The wife and the two children ended up surviving. The husband left knowing that there was about a half a mile walk to a town nearby, and they were actually able to track his footprints in the snow. And he, at one point, almost there, within a half or within a quarter of a mile to that town, deviated away from it for reasons they don't know and ended up just literally walking out into the wilderness where he succumbed to exposure. This poem kind of reminds me of that story because so we will make decisions because we think it's a shortcut, because we think it will save us on resources. So I often think of being out for a ride in the woods. You know you're not going to be near a gas station. So you find those places where you can save for gas. Maybe get to go a little further. See more because you can always spend more gas coming home when you're less at risk of getting stranded. But it's in that false security that we often find the fallacies. It's in those moments when we start to realize that those shortcomings, the shortcuts, the not well thought out plans, the idea that if we just go downhill, we can always come back up, that we find the mud, that we find the roads that we shouldn't be on, and we find the moments in which we become stranded. And suddenly a fun afternoon or a nice little car ride becomes something so much more terrifying. I think that's what I really like about this. It's a fairly understandable metaphor, but it speaks so deeply to the truth that a well thought out decision is more likely to end in our favor than something that we do on a whim, something that we do to gamble, even if it is just going downhill a little bit. Because while it might save on gas, we might find ourselves in a mud pit that we don't have the means to get out of. And I think that's applicable to a lot of life situations. A lot of times we'll make those quick decisions because we can make up for it. And that's how the hole is dug. Those small little compromises, financial decisions, relational decisions, a big move, what have you, even compromising our want for a job. We find those compromises. We don't think about it. And then suddenly we're stuck and we're stranded. And our life is not where we want it to be. And we find that our situation was so much worse to begin with, all because we delayed making a choice. I think this is a fairly poignant piece. And I agree, it is dark. But I think that's fitting because to me it comes with a warning to heed our decisions, lest we lose the chance to make them. Fantastic, right?
That was a great comment. Kel, would you read the one by Fallon for us?
Definitely. I'd be happy to. The Middle Within Crossroads by Fallon. Souls bleed from directional of chosen paths. Blister, fester, fluid collects on wrong's wrath. Pain shall never ease, O foolish acts that seem to lead me. Signs that I would never read, only grieves from doing the devil's deed.
then who am I to be the one who could ever complain? Seeking to live as myself, painting, I'm insane. Standing here silently, as truth strikes violently, words sound lifelessly as they speak from self-righteously. End poem.
Thank you for that read, Kel. And thank you for the poem, Felon. I think that, where is it now? I've lost my place, and it's a small poem. here we go, the grieves from doing the devil's deeds. And I feel like the devil's often brought up in Crossroad poems, partly because of there's that mythological, not mythological, the kind of like urban legend type thing of if you bury something at the cross, your picture of yourself at the crossroads, then you can make a deal with the devil, and you do it at the crossroads. And that was in a song, a blues song, a really long time ago. I can't remember who sang it. And then it was on the show Supernatural. They did an episode with that man there. But mm-hmm. crossroads are a metaphor for trying to make a choice. So it also brings up the devil in the sense of like, doing bad or evil, because you always have those choices of doing good, doing bad, following whatever path. So it just works on a nice metaphorical level. And Signs That I Would Never Read Only Grieves from Doing the Devil's Deeds. So I like that Signs That I Would Never Read, because sometimes you miss those signs that tell you not to go a certain way, or that somewhere is the right path, and you miss those omens, the red flags of like, this relationship is going to go badly, this is not a job that is going to work out for me. There's often red flags. And, you know, people tend to talk about the red flags, but I saw something once where they're talking about, like, recognize the green flags, too, the person who is kind to you, the who notices what you like. Like, there's green flags, too, and we tend to, like, dodge the red flags and overcompensate and maybe miss the path that has those green flags that we could grab onto. So I really liked that part about, you know, not reading the signs. Because, I mean, I see people literally not read the signs and follow directions and get lost all the time. I had this one guy who I dated. Oh, my God. Random sidebar. I lived in this apartment building that was kind of like a bit of a maze. I mean, there were staircases going in all directions, and there were parkades at different levels. But this one time, I'd only gone on a couple of dates with this guy. He calls me after leaving my house like an hour before, and by house I mean little apartment, and he was like, I can't find my car. And I'm like, what? You're still here? And he's like, I don't know how to get out of this building. So we just did not follow the signs and literally got lost. But I think that a lot of times people feel like this on a bigger like life level of not being able to find your way and not taking the time to map out where you have to go, because if you really think about it, there you can find it. I really liked that recognition that I would never read. I really liked that idea of seeking to live as myself. I think that that's a really important thing when you're finding a path to be your true self. And then for painting I'm Insane, it makes me think of maybe dealing with someone like a narcissist who makes it seem like you're insane just to want to be yourself, to follow your own path, there's that kind of gaslighting feeling here of being painted as insane for trying to go down the road that you want to. I just thought that this had a lot of strength in it's brief, but Felon is a master of brevity that hits you, and I think that this is no exception. Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, that was an awesome comment there, Faviana. I really like that you, well, your story about the guy getting lost in the apartment building was funny, so totally relatable because I'm kind of one of those people who has just a horrible sense of direction. And, you know, Felon, she just has such hard-hitting and poignant brevities. I did like Pain Shall Never Ease on Foolish Acts That Seem to Lead Me, Signs I Can Never Read Only Grieves from Doing the Devil's Deeds. You know, oftentimes we have to suffer the consequences of our choices. I really like this all the way through, but another part that really, you know, just stands out to me is standing here silently as truth strikes violently. You know, sometimes we need to take that deep breath and have that moment of silence and just let the truth hit us, no matter how much it hurts, because, you know, the truth is often painful. It's often bitter, but it is what will get us onto the path that we need to be on. So just an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. Thank you. Victoria, what were your thoughts on the poem?
I think this is such a stunning poem. And Felon always has this amazing way with words and brevities that packs a punch and leaves you thinking. There's some really amazing lines here that I think that you even hit on, Faze. The idea that signs that I would never read only grieve from doing the devil's deeds is, I would agree, that kind of idea of the red flags that we ignore, that we run past gleefully. We assume that, oh, we can make it up later, or we just flat out ignore them because we don't like what they have to say or what they have to say. And so I appreciate, too, the way that she follows that up. Then who am I to be the one could ever complain? Seeking to live as myself, painting I'm insane. To me, that really speaks to the idea of learning to live with the consequences of our actions. Often, we don't really like the taste of the medicine that comes with some of the choices that we make. But there's a beauty in being able to admit that, hey, maybe I didn't foresee this. Maybe I just ignored the warnings that were on the walls. Maybe people are just not going to understand why I live the way I do, because I finally understood what those signs say. But I think there's an understanding of coming to grips with the decisions that we've made in life, with the bargains that we've made with each choice or each concession that we've given to our morals and values. And I appreciate that the very last line ends with standing here silently as truth strikes violently. Words sound lifeless as they speak from self-righteously. I think that's really important because it actually kind of reminds me of the biblical teaching that he without sin should throw the first stone, because it's a call to remind us that we've all made bad choices. We've all made decisions that we regret. We all have a history that we'd rather not talk about, be it some foolish teenage years, a marriage that didn't work out, or, you know, maybe a habit that stuck around a little longer than we wanted it to. There's a beauty in allowing the truth to come, because when you've hidden in the shadows for so long, sometimes it can strike the hardest. Sometimes that experience speaks the loudest, but it's also a call for humility, because we all are on this journey where we're trying to learn and do better and hopefully be better, because that's all we can do. Make the deals with the devil and cross our fingers that it doesn't bite us in the ass. Just amazing weaving of words.
Great comment, Gloria. Kel, did you get a chance to comment on this one yet?
Not yet. I really don't know that I can add a whole lot more to it. You know, just say, you know, we all have our, we all make our own decisions, and that's the way it should be. Because, you know, we have free will for a reason, and we make mistakes, and we're supposed to learn from them. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But, you know, that's the idea, is you're supposed to learn from your mistakes. Sometimes it takes a couple times, especially for me. You know, people thought I was crazy when I decided to marry my husband and move across the world, basically. But, you know, I don't regret it, and I'm glad I did. So that wasn't a mistake, but it could have been. You know, my family was worried that something would happen to me while I was over there. But, you know, nothing did. I had a wonderful marriage. It didn't last very long, but it was a wonderful marriage. And I don't have any regrets, and they realized that. But they also got to finally meet him, and I think that helped. So, but yeah, you know, just standing here silently as truth strikes violently, words sound lifelessly as they speak for self-righteously. Whew, that's a mouthful. But it says an awful lot. You know, people, you know, can talk out their butts, you know, and think they know what they're talking about when they don't, because it's not up to them what you do or what you don't do. That's free choice. That's your decision to make, whether it's right or wrong, whether it leads you down the wrong path or not. You go your own way. And that's all I have to say. Back to you, Faith.
Okay, thank you, Cal. I'm looking at my list, and I only have three more poems, and we have about 25 minutes left of reading. So if anyone has one that you would like to add to the topic board, please do. And then, Victoria, would you please read the poem by the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey?
Oh, I would love to. This is Unshared Experience by Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. Incomplete, it's so beautiful, my pain erupts, volcanic sorrow burning its way through my love. Ashes of my humor rain, small, frozen, shut, like nature's lottery ticket. God's vault opens up. Just a withered percussionist with a hole in my drum, because what is not shown is how long on this lonely road I've come. End poem.
Beautiful read. And Dex, this is a beautiful poem to talk about how having nobody to share those choices with and that journey with can really change things. And not having someone to appreciate the beautiful sky or the storm, or, you know, go through it all with someone is really tough. It's so beautiful, my pain erupts. And that's the thing, like, sometimes if you have, like, a wonderful moment, you want to share it with someone. You go to call that person who maybe you can't call anymore. You reach for them, and they're not there during the time where it's like, they would appreciate this. Like, nature's lottery ticket is a really fun way of wording that. Dex has a way with words, for sure. And because what is not shown is how long on this lonely road I've come. Sometimes you've made lots of progress and, you know, come a long way, and maybe there was nobody there to see that progress. Maybe there's not anyone around who was there when you were going through your rough patch that maybe you aren't proud of, and then now you've come through and you're strong, and it would be nice if someone acknowledged that growth and that change and that journey. And if you don't have someone to experience that with, then that can influence the path that you take sometimes. So I thought this was really nice. It's a pre-write. It wasn't written specifically for the contest, but I'm really glad that he shared it with us. Kel, would you like to comment?
Yeah. This is a really powerful and profoundly emotional write. I really like just the weathered percussionist with a hole in my drum, because what is not shown is how long on this lonely road I've come. You know, it's very eloquently written, very beautiful imagery all the way through. It's just beautiful.
It is. And Pam, what did you think of the poem?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is just absolutely beautiful. I like how he captures so much emotion in a brevity and with imagery. Ashes of my humor rain, smiles frozen shut like nature's lottery ticket. God's bolt open up, just a weathered percussionist with a hole in my drum. I mean, all the way through, it's a wonderful write. But what I like is, as was mentioned, how, you know, he sees the beauty of the rain, the beauty of the cloud gathered together, and the beauty of the storm, and realizes that he's taking a lonely road, because what is not shown is how long on this lonely road I've come. Because you just, the whole idea of not, you know, realizing that how much progress or how much you've moved forward, because it just feels so overwhelming. Just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done.
I agree. And Victoria, what did you think?
I have to agree with Pam. And even to add to hers, because I had much the same thought, what's so hard about a lonely road is that people do not always see, like Pam said, all the progress that you've made. They also don't see how much you've changed, for good or for bad, or even indifferent. They don't see. They just see this weathered percussionist who has a hole in his drum. They don't see why. They don't know when it happened. And as much as you can talk about yourself in the past, in the past I was like X, Y, and Z, it doesn't change who you are in the present and how you interact with people and who people know. Sure, that we all have a history of our own to some extent, but sometimes that history feels a little more real when we have someone preserving it with us. And this reminds us of how isolating a lonely road can be. I think it's a stunning piece, because it not only shows the progress that we make, that often the progress that we make has to be done by ourselves, but it also is a large testament to the history that is lost, because people don't see those intimate twists and turns, the late night drives, if you will, where you get to see the fireflies splatter on the windshield or the stars or the storm and the way it lights up the dark. It's history that dies with us. And if I might even, my sister gave me the most beautiful poetic idea, and this reminds me of it, but she was telling me that there is a scar on her hand for when she gave birth to my niece in January. And nobody will recognize the scar. Nobody will know the scar. They may not even know that it's there, because it's just a small circle from where the IV was. And that scar and the memory that's attached to it will die with my sister. Arguably now it will die with me, because I know the story of the scar. But there are those scars on all of us that nobody else will notice, that nobody else will see, of cherished memories, of hard moments, that will go to the grave, because they're either not shared or because they're not important enough for anybody else to remember. Or they may just not understand the impact it has on us. And so I think this is such a powerful piece that speaks not just of an actual lonely road, an actual journey, but even those moments of our lives that nobody else can share in, whether you're in a relationship or not, because they're just so incredibly intimate, and how they shape us, one small pelting of rain at a time.
Well, that felt like a prompt for a new contest.
Right?
I can't use that.
I want to write on it because I was like, Mary, that's amazing.
It is. All right. You got to write something or make that into a contest. For sure.
You got it. Only for you, Faith. You got it.
Thank you. My lovely internet is frozen. But, Pam, would you grab the one by Kenny, Kenny W., if you can, from the topic board, while I try to fix
Absolutely.
My internet?
Absolutely. I'd be happy
Thank you.
To. And I'm guessing you would like me to read it.
That would be amazing, if you can.
Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have Calvin's Crossroad Blues Can't Lose by Kenny W. And it goes like this. Robert Frost had just two paths to pick. Here, I have three. Which to choose? Paradise, freedom, or the blues? Though I stand here silently, surely I cannot go wrong. If paradise awaits my mortal soul, are Sam, Otis, and Marvin already there? And freedom sounds good to me, too. Will I find Mahalia, Nina, and Odetta? And blues and pain, sometimes my only friend. Robert, Muddy, and the Wolf, all welcoming. Normally, I just go where the music takes me. But here, I'm on the road to anywhere to be welcomed inside. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you. I love that he got the picture of the album by Calvin Russell, and it's Calvin's lyrics who we're using as the prompt, so that's cool. And the reference to Robert Frost makes sense because he's so famous for the choosing the road in his poem. But the idea that in Robert Frost's version, he had only two paths. And then here we have paradise, freedom, or the blues in Calvin's version. And I think that it was nice of Kenny to recognize that sometimes there's more than two choices. And sometimes it's not as straightforward as we might like to think when we picture a fork in the road. Paradise, described as having some of those other great singers up there. And then freedom, finding Mahalia, Nina, and Odetta, who I confess I'm not very familiar with them, so I'd have to look into that. And then the blues and the pain, even in the blues you see the different, I think, blues singers that he's referencing there. There's so many musical references here that I think work really nicely, and that choosing the different paths take you to a different style of music, and each of those singers and their songs, I think, can represent different elements of life because they all have their own kind of style and have lyrics that speak to, you know, different sides of life. I thought that was a really nice response, since this is inspired by music, to include the music in the response. Victoria, what did you think?
So I first have to share a fun little tidbit. But the two roads that everyone loves to reference actually wasn't written about Robert Frost determining what path he should take. It was actually teasing his friend Edward Thomas. Edward Thomas. And because Edward Thomas was being indecisive, and so it's a tease of being offered two paths and not being able to take either one, because he was trying to figure out if he should join the war or if he shouldn't join the war, and he thought he should. But anyway, long story short, that poem's actually a tease between friends. And so I love that it's brought up here, because there is still that indecision, the idea that I can't go wrong either way, even though the original poem kind of hindered on moral values, Edward Thomas feeling bad about the war, and yet feeling that there was a moral obligation to join. And so in this one, there's almost that freeing of it. And I think that contrast in the root natures of the poem is what's striking, because so often we look at these decisions and we look at these opportunities and we think there's not a bad decision here. Either way, it's going to be good. But sometimes we have those moral dilemmas where, like in Edward's case, we don't think that war is right, but we feel like it's our obligation. And so you have that morality versus the obligation. And is there a wrong answer there? Is there a right answer there? And the dilemma that comes with it. And so I think that's kind of what's really fun about this one, is that it doesn't just throw the idea of having more options to choose from. It also allows for there to be a tease in and of itself, that not all the indecisiveness has to be rooted in this idea of morality and the bad things and the struggles that we have in life. And so I think that's actually really quite cunning of him to have written this with that poem in mind. It's just super fun. And again, that kind of forking in the road, the no bad decision, really clever.
I'm glad that you shared that, because I had totally forgotten that about Robert Frost's poem, and that really does help put things into context. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I like learning that about Robert Frost's poem. It's always cool to learn something new. I think this has to be one of my favorite poems by Kenny, and I do like all his poetry, but yeah, definitely a favorite. Now, I'm not 100% sure, but I do know at least some of these singers, such as Muddy Waters, Otis, are ones that were part of that legend of really successful blues singers who met the devil at the crossroads and made a deal. And not that they really did, but it became part of, those, what do you call those modern day legends? Urban myths. They became, and though I can't say for sure all of them are, I would guess, given that at least some of them are, that, that there's a good chance that within Kenny's poem he's referenced a lot of singers who became known for a legend of, making that deal at the crossroads. And what I really like is where he says, Robert, Muddy, and the Wolf, all welcome. Normally, I would just go where the music takes me, but here, I'm on the road to anywhere to be welcomed inside. It almost has that feel to me of I'd rather be, hanging out and having fun with the sinners than, with the uppity, saints. It's not directly said, but, there's kind of this whole tone and vibe that here's a person who'd rather hang out with those who know the blues and have lived the blues, So I just think it's a wonderful brevity all the way through and very well done.
And I think what you just said there matches really well with the singer who inspired us for this contest, because, I mean, he was someone who spent time in prison, and then he was homeless, and, like, he definitely was one of those guys who lived the blues and had stories to tell, and I think that he probably would have fit in with that crowd, and it's appropriate for that to be referenced.
Oh, cool. Well, I will say that your show has definitely inspired me to want to actually get out there and, like, I mean, I want to listen to his music. I've never heard it, so I'm going to have to look it up on YouTube and give it a listen.
Yeah. I'm not very much into country usually, and it's kind of like a folksy country feel, but I really love his lyrics. And I was just visiting my dad, and my dad had it on in the background whenever we were playing cards, so I just, it stuck with me. Kel, what were your thoughts?
Well, I've never heard of him either, so I'm going to have to look him up because I'm fascinated now. But I really like this poem. It has a lighthearted, hopeful, positive sound to it. Though I stand here silently, surely I cannot go wrong. If paradise awaits my mortal soul, are Sam, Otis, and Marvin already there? And, you know, is this... And then the end, normally I just go where the music takes me, but here I'm on the road to anywhere to be welcomed inside. I mean, that's just a beautiful line right there. And, you know, this is just a very lighthearted, upbeat, positive poem. I loved it.
Sorry, I was stuck on mute. That was a great comment. So we're going to read the last one from the contest by Deborah Thomas, and then hopefully we have time for Wichita Rick's poem as well. All right, so this is the one by Deborah Thomas. I'll give it a quick read. Where do I go from here? I don't know how to be myself. I've many personalities, fears of false realities, obedience to society. So who is this thing called me? I'm a grown-up woman now. Be yourself. But I don't know how. I change my colors to fit in. They say I'm fat, but what is thin? I blink, and then I'm someone else. But I have yet to find myself. The mirror reflects my aging face, but doesn't show my soul. Clerics tell me what awaits, but where am I to go? Way too many variables that define human beings, but I keep searching for myself, and who's this face I'm seeing? These crossroads make no choices clear, so tell me where I go from here. End poem. Well, Deborah, I really enjoyed flow of this. I think it had some nice rhyming to it, and there's that kind of questioning in it that I really enjoyed, because it's not just questioning what path to take. It's questioning who you are, because choosing a path often is about choosing who you want to be. Who are you, and what matters to you is really important in choosing any kind of big path for your life. So I think that it's really wise to question your identity before questioning the path. It's a important thought that needs to go into things that is sometimes lacking, and then that's how people end up on the wrong path. So I really appreciate that there is that self-questioning here. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is wonderful. It flows beautifully. I, too, really enjoyed the questions, the whole idea of searching for yourself. And what I like is that it's very relatable in the idea of I'm a grown-up woman now, be yourself, but I don't know how. I change my colors to fit in. And I think, you know, we hope to grow out of that, but oftentimes, you know, when
comfortable walking through life, it is easier and more tempting to just, you know, change ourselves to fit in. But we do have to step back and ask those questions and find out who we really are. So just an excellent light and very well done.
I agree. Now, I do want to get in this one by Wichita Rick. So I'm going to ask that everybody else just puts a written comment on the one by Deborah. And, Deborah, I really appreciate you contributing to the show. Wichita Rick has been hanging out on the board, and I want to get him featured as well in our last couple of minutes. Kel, would you read that for us?
Okay.
Thank you.
Keys Unlock Doors by Wichita Rick. Keys unlock doors. Waiting on a new storm, or are we wanting to take on another form? Lost on the brink, just idling, fighting for time to make that link. Shouting out what was the key that was missed. Will finding it let them be reborn? Paths await with this little debate. Harder with hills, many willing to guide us around this obelisk. Preparations made, set to travel, finding a direction to unravel. Will we find the light before the dawn? Locksmiths may be becoming the new messiahs. Need a pick to find that niche. Going out also means reaching in. Focus on an entryway to open a hatch. Hopefully letting us find a new zone. Certain questions don't always wait patiently. Seeking solace while turning handles to resolve that itch. Skeletons in a closet still have a door and require a skeleton key to uncover. Opening new entrances to not be alone. Passageways with more gates locked but never permanently blocked. A golden ring holds keys to be used based on our needs. New admissions to help enrich our sea. Always a new door for us, but will we know which one? Or will it open up just another home or room that is worse? End poem.
Great read. Thank you, Cal. And thank you, Wichita Rick, for adding this to the show. I really liked the lines, going out also means reaching in. Focus on an entryway to open a hatch, hopefully letting us find a new zone. Going out does mean reaching in. Sometimes if you're going to put yourself out there, you have to, you know, figure out what part of you you're willing to share. There's a vulnerability in going out in social situations and in many different ways. And I feel like after being in isolation this past, you know, year or two, going out into the world feels like a big thing sometimes. And it, going out in general, in terms of like, this whole metaphor of putting yourself out there, of taking new paths, of opening doors of opportunity, it does make you look inside and figure out who you are, like it was discussed at the beginning of Deborah's poem. Oh, and I'm out of time, so thank you so much to Victoria, Pam, and Kel for calling in and for everyone who wrote for the show. Thank you very much. I hope that I see you again next week.
Wonderful show.